We're live.
But you take a break, you go outside, you get some sunshine, even though it's cloudy outside.
It's not, it's sunny, you just don't believe me. It's Seattle, and it's sunny, that means the world is going to end.
Okay, because I haven't seen it. You know what? Your microphone isn't plugged in there. You're freaking out all the production guys, because we had a switch over here. They can only hear me talking.
Allow me to...
plug in the Matrix. There you go.
We're good.
Are we back? We're good?
We're good.
Okay, the AV guys can now relax. It's all good.
Do I need to redo my humor or no? Or just...
We don't know who you are.
Yes. Oh. You're welcome back, Corey.
Corey's back.
Welcome back, Corey. He's back. He was enjoying some time off to the side answering some questions about different things, and he managed to go and slip out outside to get some of the sun, which is actually cloudy. And that's all I'm going to contribute to this. But we are back, and we're talking on what is new in a Server 2012 R2. I'm still here, same seat. I'm still here. It's all good.
You're the one consistent.
I am the consistent thing. Although, if you're watching this in a recorded format, you may have noticed that after four sessions, I changed shirts. And then I'm out in a new shirt.
Thank God.
You just have three of those shirts or something like that, right?
These two all systems? I sleep in them. I do everything.
They're like pajamas. You know.
Have you actually ever seen me in a different shirt than this?
I don't
think
I have. I've only ever seen you in those shirts.
I could take it off. No, I won't.
Jumpstart target agenda of what we're looking at right now. The last session that we're going to be talking about today is about web application and platform for Windows Server 2012 R2. I will give you guys a little bit of a heads up as a warning or as a commentary, I guess you would say. This is a pretty light section.
Yeah, that's going to be pretty quick.
So it's not going to be the fully advertised 90 minutes of content and going until late at night or late in the morning, whatever it is you happen to be.
For the record, in case you're wondering why that is, to be quite honest, the agenda for this was released before the product was.
Right.
And so we didn't know what we were going to be presenting on.
And how much stuff we had to be able to present because we didn't know what was inside
of
the technology.
So essentially we took a guess and went, okay, we'll assume. But for this particular section, it's very light. There wasn't a great deal of change that happened from 2012 to R2 for the web server for IIS 8.
You got it.
Through 8, I don't know what the version, 8.5, I think, where this one would be, I don't know.
It's up there.
Once
again, standard slide talking about the downloads. If you're just joining in right now, you can download a preview copy of Windows Server 2012 R2 from aka.ms/ws2012r2, or you can get the System Center 2012 R2 preview at aka.ms/sc2012r2. At the bottom there, if this is still in a live format or if you're doing a replay, we are doing a special System Center 2012 R2 jumpstart on July the 15th at aka.ms/sc2js. And that's where you'll see my colleague Simon Perriman and a whole slew of different product managers coming through and talking about different technologies related to System Center.
Yeah, and if you watch some of the other videos, in particular around storage, networking, file server, we did a lot of alluding to the role that System Center plays in all of that and bubbling a lot of that complexity up into policy-driven settings, especially around networking with Virtual Machine Manager. And so that's where you'll get some more information on that, and you'll be able to see all that play through. So it should be good and interesting. But in addition, they'll do things like Operations Manager, Orchestrator, and Service Manager as well in that, I believe. So
lots of goodness that is Server 2012 R2 and also System Center 2012 R2 coming up in a little while. Now, Server 2012 R2 preview with concept of going with web hosting and where it happens to sit for web hosting. We did talk about in the earlier sessions about how we've done a lot of stuff for very large organizations, from a data center perspective for Server 2012 with the advent of better teaming, dynamic teaming that takes place inside Windows Server with NIC teams, storage improvements and enhancements with storage spaces, now being able to do tiering and that sort of stuff on a very large scale, virtualization, how it all sits as well, the whole concept of going with a file server, scale a file server share as a main repository for where your data happens to be. All that sort of stuff all still plays out to any of the technology that we've talked about in this session, which obviously is about IIS, and also plays out to very large hosters and also to very large organizations that have large web farms that people are going to be working with too.
Absolutely. Now, if you think about IIS, and this is one of the kind of the lines I like to draw, as far as an IT pro goes, in terms of installing and configuring a web server with IIS, there's not a lot there that as an IT pro, which is the audience for this, that they really have to do anymore. Mm-hmm. Once upon a time, building a web server was a fairly complicated task. With IIS 8, and really with IIS 7 as well, and 7.5, it's gotten a whole lot simpler. To the point that once you install and configure it, there's not a whole lot else you really have to do other than choosing the right features and components. And in many cases, the application that's going to run on it is going to dictate that.
Right.
And a lot of that guidance is going to come from the development community, the development side of the house, to say, hey, we've built a web app, it's going to go on a server, and in many cases, they'll tell you the configuration or potentially configure it themselves.
Yeah, I was about to say, app deployment on IIS 8 is from Visual Studio.
It's almost self-configuring.
It's literally, it's a package, which is a zip file that you simply expand upon, and that happens to be all the proper folder structure and all the different things that you then put it inside the proper IIS directory.
Exactly. And it's very settings-driven, so the settings are already in a lot of those files. You don't need to necessarily configure them manually through the UI. And you know, it's getting more and more and more of that style. And we'll talk about how, you know, how Azure plays into this and how there's now parity amongst the web server components to just make that whole experience a whole lot simpler.
Right. And just before anyone asks, don't worry, we're not going to scare you. There's not going to be any Visual Studio coming up in here. There's also not going to be any Team Foundation services coming up in here as well. Although, obviously, those all play into being able to have, as a target destination, publishing to IIS or publishing to Azure or publishing to online cloud services.
It's a different audience for that sort of thing. And just like, you know, with PowerShell, we looked at a lot of PowerShell, and you can do PowerShell commands that are very IT pro-like, but PowerShell can also be a very good developer environment to build very complex things. And this sort of bridges that, both those worlds as well.
Yep. Slide-wise, modern web hosting scenarios, either be doing some kind of an enterprise web hosting solution with dedicated infrastructure to optimize performance for things going out and being able to do things with it. Some things you have to worry about, simply a small number of apps that are per tenant or per business user, highly customizable enterprise apps like SharePoint, or shared web cloud hosting solutions or platform as a service infrastructure where you basically have a highly shared environment, highly multi-tenant environment, where you have to worry more so about the developer slash operations side of things for optimization with very self-serve, simple deployment and scale options.
Yeah, and you know, SharePoint's the perfect example of web configuration nowadays. Mm-hmm. SharePoint obviously runs on a web server, but it simply says, hey, I need a web server, and does everything for you.
Yeah.
And the configuration of the web server is more or less controlled by the configuration of SharePoint. Mm-hmm. OWA is the same way with Exchange, right? You configure the web server by configuring Exchange, so it's very rare you're directly in the web server doing things.
VDI web application
gateway,
the very front end, it's done by configuring the VDI pieces.
Yeah, you don't,
by going
you're not
IIS
in the web server doing that.
Unless I guess you want to tweak some graphics or something.
Well, there are actually, in specific to VDI, there are a couple of things that you can always set on the web server. Not really the topic for this discussion, but you know, as for if you're sitting there thinking, oh, what is that? Well, the RD gateway for the RD web access website value is done through the settings of the web page, as an example.
Yeah, so. No problem. Some things relating to Server 2012 enterprise web hosting. We'll be taking a look at some of this sort of stuff. If you're familiar with Server 2012 and 2012 R2, Server 2012 had these capabilities as well. CPU throttling to basically help and make sure that there's not a single server website applications going off and running away with all the different processes, or processes if you're American. Application initialization to speed up different ways that you can go and get things up and running. Dynamic FTP and IP blocking and restrictions that are going on the different systems and everything else that's there too. And then going down below as far as shared cloud web hosting side of things with regards to server name, SNIs. I can't even see what the word says.
Yeah, server name indication is host headers for SSL.
Right.
And so we'll take a look at that when we get in here.
Right. Non-uniform memory architecture, NUMAR architecture. Can't really demonstrate that, but we can talk about it from an architectural perspective, how it's now supported. Centralized SSL is kind of cool. We'll be looking at how to do that. And then also doing some Windows Azure stuff. With regards, no, we're not going to be doing this one here, actually, but we can talk about it, the whole concept of Windows Azure Pack and what you can do with Azure Pack for infrastructure as a service.
And Windows Azure Pack is, again, another example of an application that runs on IIS.
Right.
It controls IIS. You don't configure IIS, but it's a service package you can install as an application for IIS that does, you know, Azure-like private cloud functions, creating and modifying services in VMs, and just lives as a web application that you just install. So.
It does require the System Center 2012 R2 backend to be able to go off and to do all this kind of work stuff. But it simply is a nice web interface portal.
Yeah, so just another, it's another web application like OWA, like SharePoint. Did my watch hit the table?
Let's jump right in here with enterprise web hosting concepts for as far as high performance applications are concerned. The main way of being able to do this is going through and now having granular control over things like CPU throttling and also being able to handle very fast initialization of applications and being able to do some dynamic IP restrictions based on people that are doing nasty things to your environment. And so
The idea behind this is to have the ability to either protect your servers from denial of service attacks, being able to go through and reduce the vulnerability of attacks because you can have automatic locking out of different people and different things that are happening to your different websites. The ability to go through and do CPU throttling, and conceptually what that looks like from a CPU throttling scenario. The idea of that one particular tenant or one particular application that's up and running on the server is going to be monopolizing and taking control over all the CPU on that particular box, causing a unforeseeable, unfortunate experience of slowness.
Conceptually. How about actually?
You want to show me instead?
We can show that. We can do actually, not conceptually.
I don't really need to see the particular slide myself, but there is a nice animation talking about this.
CPU's going red.
CPU's going red. It's not very happy.
All right, so take a look down here for a second, guys.
Flip over the demo machine.
What I've got here is a web server running IIS, and I'm looking at the application pools. Now, application pools, if you're not familiar with IIS, this is a concept that's been around for many versions.
Yep.
But when you run an application website, the pool is the process on the system it actually runs in. Pool's going to have credentials and context. Pool's going to have access to databases and files. And you can have multiple websites running in an application pool. A pool is an isolation boundary. New, what's been added is, if I go under the advanced settings of the pool, we have this option for CPU throttling, so I can limit how much CPU an actual process can take up. So as an example, I actually do processor-based affinity and things of that nature.
So in the past, all you could do this on was the entire IIS web service itself.
Right.
And everyone was all treated equitably.
Exactly.
Same way.
Now I can do it per web, per application pool, which means essentially per application or per tenant.
Right.
That would allow me to do. So we're going to limit this to 15%, which is 15 times 1,000 of a percent. And we got a couple of action choices. One of the ones we're going to choose here is to throttle. So we'll hit OK on that. Now I'm going to fire up a little app that eats CPU. So this is a little...
It's a misbehaving app.
Yep. So this is going to fire up a couple of web pages that are designed to do nothing but just spin circles and generate CPU. And you'll see it's going to fire up five occurrences of that. So while that's hitting in the background, this, by the way, runs for 30 seconds. I think I just closed one of the pages, but that doesn't matter. We go look at... Task Manager, we can see that under our background processes, here's the IIS worker process. And you notice that that guy is really not going much above 15%. It's not an exact 15, but it's somewhere in the vicinity of 15.
Right.
And so you see, just due to fluctuations and calculations and whatnot, it sits around anywhere from 14 to roughly 20%. That kind of wavers around.
The other websites / applications that are running on this box
are now
would
not,
still continue to function as normal without any kind of restriction.
This particular app is now no longer conducting essentially a denial of service attack on the CPU.
Right.
So that's all done. We'll close that out. And so as just kind of another sort of example of that, this is also, by the way, live. So if I'm quick enough here, so I go advanced settings, and I'm just going to go no action. Fire that again. And we'll see that the worker process now is going to spike up. If I jump back in real quick, and I'm trying to be really quick about this on purpose.
Oh,
I think I just blew it. I misclicked throttle and OK. You'll see that guy.
97, and it comes right back
down. It'll drop right back down real quick.
So
I know that was kind of fast, and if you didn't catch it, I'm sorry, but I had to be because I've only got 30 seconds.
Right.
But just to give you, again, an idea of what that CPU throttling is all about. And it's not just for, if you're on throttling, it's not just for IIS processes. It also works the exact same way against PHP. And so as an example of that, I've got another variation of this, which is based on PHP. So it's going to fire up essentially fast CGI PHP processes on IIS that are going to do fundamentally the same thing. But if I look back in Task Manager, you can start to see these fast CGI processes spin up right here. But you'll notice that they're collectively not going to exceed 15%.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 15% for the entire application pool, no matter how many processes that application pool might actually spawn. And so this is specifically designed for multi-tenant environments,
mm-hmm.
where you have different tenants on the same piece of hardware, and you don't know how good the other guy's code is. The other guy's code might suck. It might use all the CPU. This prevents him from being, you know, we use the term nasty neighbor a lot, and using all the resources of that physical box. So there you go.
Nice. Application initialization is another area. We don't have a demonstration for this one here.
No, but if you want a demonstration of it, open any SharePoint 2013 site.
Yeah?
Because the minute you open that site, the first thing it says is, please wait while we get things ready.
Okay. And basically what it's doing is it's returning a splash page of text that basically says, please wait as we're getting things ready.
Right, because we know what happens with IIS, because it's based on .NET, is it has this just-in-time compilation process, so the JIT. And if you're the first guy to hit a website that's based on this, you notice it kind of hangs and for a minute while it compiles the site. What this does is just make the user experience better by the minute you hit the site going, look at this, you know, it's elevator music while I compile in the background, and then the website comes up. And so a lot of modern applications built on Windows that are web-based applications, when you hit them for the first time, that's what you see. Please wait while we get a few things ready. And then, you know, 10, 20, 30, whatever later, the actual site pops up. So
Mario had a question online. I want to make sure that we address this one here. For that website demonstration you're doing for CPU throttling, you were using a user interface. Could you do that a different way?
I'm going to say yes, but I don't know exactly how.
Right.
Can you do it through PowerShell?
That's
yes.
That's where I was trying to lead to.
I don't think there is a PowerShell commandlet that does throttling, but IIS has a pretty good configuration scripting interface that it may hook into. So yes, you can do it from a command line. I don't know that it's a, you know, set CPU throttling. I know there's no command like that, so it might be a little more convoluted.
No problem. I just want to make sure we got it. Another one for doing enterprise class stuff is dynamic IP restrictions. We're able to go through and basically protect your servers from different things, potentially denial of service attack, that sort of stuff.
This is a kind of a fun one because essentially what it does is if you get too many connections from the same IP, it assumes that guy's a bad guy and blocks it for a period of time and then releases it again.
Right.
So it's a really, really simple concept and it was just introduced with 2012, so worth kind of pointing out and mentioning.
Yep. You can also do it with login-only mode to basically determine if this is an issue or not, or you can actually put it in as an actual deny them access to it, in which case you can go through and redirect them off. Or simply ignore the requests. You simply go in and enable the domain IP restriction settings, say allow or deny, go in and make it so that you're either going to be a deny action of being forbidden, unauthorized, or simply not found or abort, so you basically hide it, if you will, and then go through and has it as an optional feature. You do have to install it when you go off and bring in IIS using Server Manager as being able to bring that on. FTP logon attempts is kind of similar in nature. If you're using FTP on a server that's using the built-in FTP capabilities built in with IIS, where you can go through and basically say after so many bad logon attempts, go ahead and dump them out or ignore them or simply close the session off. Same kind of idea for server blocks.
FTP also does user-level isolation. Now, where you can have, instead of one shared FTP route for the whole server, it's a FTP home directory for a user for the server, so it's, it does isolation, which is nice.
What else do we have here, man? For shared cloud hosting and that sort of stuff, high-density websites and where they happen to go. We have something here called Server Name Indicator, which is, as you mentioned, a CNAME for SSL.
It's a host header for SSL.
Host header.
Host header for SSL. So to take a look at what that is, if you're a hoster, and if you're not a hoster, you probably don't care about this, but if you're a hoster, you've got a lot of tenants that have SSL-based implementations. And so if you want to set up SSL on a web server, you've got to go generate a certificate, get it signed by a public CA, get the certificate back, and load the certificate into your website. And so as a hoster, a lot of times you'd provide, you know, tools to do that. But, you know, in larger organizations or whatever, you might have to do that manually. And so that involves going in and importing the certificate on every single web server, going into places like, you know, the bindings on the website, and then configuring the bindings for, not the browsing, configuring the bindings for SSL, and then choosing the certificate that you want to use.
Right.
And, you know, that can be a fairly cumbersome process. It can be made better by scripting, but it's by no means pretty. And then when it comes time to renew the certificate, so you got to repeat the process again. What's been introduced now with Windows Server 2012 and, of course, carrying into R2 is this notion of a centralized certificate store.
Correct.
Now, here's how this works. I have a share on my network. And on that share, I have an exported PFX of a wildcard certificate. This doesn't have to be a wildcard. It can be dedicated to a particular name. However, the benefit of a wildcard is it can be shared by multiple servers.
Right.
Or I could have, you know, if I have 10 different servers with 10 different names, I can put the individual certificates here. The naming requirement that you see is _.contoso.com. This is the requirement for naming a wildcard, which would ordinarily be star.contoso.com. So I need to name that as in this fashion just to be recognized by the UI. It's a PFX protected by a password. there's a new capability in Windows Server 2012, which is when I export a PFX, you put a password on it, or you can ACL it via NTFS so that only certain users and groups can have access to it. And that comes into play for this particular scenario. Because a lot of people go, wait a minute, I don't want to put my PFXs on a shared folder somewhere with just a password. I want something stronger. And so you can use NTFS-based permissions to protect these
standard
things.
Standard ACL permissions with access control entries that are on.
That's right. So this is up here on a share. Now what I do is on the web server itself, I come down, I install this feature called centralized certificates. Open that up and go edit feature settings. I've already got this configured. And it's real simple. I put in a path. Optionally, credentials to access the path, which you know, I'm using my best practice of my domain admin. but I, you know, what you would do in reality is I'd set up, you know, an SSL access account, and only that account would have access to the share via NTFS. That account would be the account that was named when I did the PFX export, and so I put that to access the share. And then if there's a private key password on the certificate itself, I include that here as well. And once I configure that, it goes, hey, it enumerates all the certificates, and if you double-click it, it should open. That tells you that IIS can go in and read this certificate.
It's not being blocked by rights.
Now what you do is on your website, in your bindings, is rather than choosing a certificate, you simply go use the central store.
Oh, I see. And the SSL certificate area grays out.
Right. And so now, and then we need to also add a host name. So this is server one. And this is where SNI comes into play. So I can require SNI be included or not require it based on the name of the website. Right? SNI is a newer standard that allows host headers to be used to authenticate over SSL, whereas in the past, SSL would only do it to the IP address. So we're going to do central store, put the name of the server in there, and hit OK. And so what's going to happen now is when I browse to that website, we'll navigate to server one, toso.com, and we'll just get the IIS default website, but it's over SSL, and I can actually go look at the certificate here, somewhere-ish. There it is right there. So view certificates, and you can see this is the certificate with the wildcard that was used.
Right.
Now, what's even more interesting is if I go back to the web server, pop out a command prompt, go to a NetShell, and I say, okay, show me all the SSL certs that are on this machine. Bear with me while I remember my syntax. Show SSL cert. Okay, I did this two words. You can see that there's, So there's no certificate here for web server authentication. All right, so there's a couple of certificates there, but neither one of these are actually for web server authentication.
Mm-hmm.
Now, key thing here is the certificate is actually imported on the fly. So when you navigate to the website over SSL, because it's using centralized certificates, it simply goes out, downloads the certificate on the fly, imports it, uses it, and when the sessions are all closed up, it's gone anymore. So the private key is only ever in memory, never persisted on the machine. And where this gets even more interesting is when it comes time to renew or replace the certificates, all you've got to do is create a new PFX and just swap out the file on the share.
So copy it out, put the new one in.
Just copy, replace. And you've now upgraded the certificate across all your machines.
And again, this also applies to if you happen to have one web server, or if you got 15 web servers that are looking at that one location, as long as you're authorized to do it, then
right. So if you got a web farm that's customer facing, for example, and you want to put the certificates on your internal network, works great. You got a SharePoint farm, works great. So there's lots of ways that you can actually leverage this to just reduce the work. And when it comes time to upgrade your SSL cert, you just swap out this file and you're done.
Right. Another one that we have from a scalability perspective is obviously now support for NUMA. That was already there in 2012. It's still there in 2012 R2.
Yep. Now, there's been improvements in NUMA.
Right.
I'm not qualified to talk about NUMA memory mapping. But there was NUMA compatibility was introduced with 2012.
Right.
There were some scenarios that were found where it didn't scale as well as they wanted mm-hmm. under certain workloads, and so those have all been cleaned up, tidied up, and made better.
Right.
So if you were using NUMA, which is just turned on by default, and you found that you had, you know, in very large scale environments, performance issues, and you determined that those related to NUMA, a lot of that's been fixed and cleaned up in 2012 R2. Very few people will ever notice this,
right.
so to speak.
Again, especially on a web server, massive applications that would be using this. That's not your regular IIS website or whatever it happens to be. NUMA, in case you're wondering, non-uniform memory architecture, the ability of basically processors having access to local memory that's associated with it, as opposed to having to jump across and grab memory from other areas. It comes to play when you have a large-scale server.
Yeah, I mean, NUMA, at the end of the day, is different sockets on the machine have different paths to different memory areas
right.
on the machine. That's why your RAM is on two sides of the motherboard,
right?
Because there's different physical paths. And we want different sockets and cores using the stuff that's closest to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so NUMA recognizes that topology and optimizes for it.
Consistent and repeatable configurations is the next section.
This is, you know, it's a big one within IIS because when you have to deal with a lot of different web servers, there's a couple of things you can do to simplify this, and we'll look at one here in particular, which is shared configurations, which I'll show you here in just a minute. So,
yep, actually, that's the very first one that comes up.
Okay, perfect.
The idea is having a shared configuration, so similar to the concept of having a share area for your certs in concept form. Same thing as far as being able to set up and work with a shared configuration editor for your individual web servers.
So to take a look at that, if we look over here, there's an area called shared configuration within IIS, and this is just a feature you install. Open that up, and this is real, real simple. We're not going to do it, but enable shared configuration, and what we do is we designate a path and we designate some credentials. Then what we do is we export the configuration of the machine,
mm-hmm.
and the configuration of the machine is now stored on a file share. On our second web server, we simply point it at that same configuration, and it will import it automatically. So as you bring additional web servers online, you don't need to worry about configuring those individually. You just point them at the shared configuration. And so everything you see in here, from the application settings to the pool settings, to all these individual components, compression, CGI, certificates, everything is just mirrored across all the servers.
Mm-hmm.
And so from a scale-out standpoint, very simple, very easy to use. I think the next one you're going to mention is the configuration editor, correct?
Right, which is that guy right there. Right,
so which is this guy right here. So we'll just jump into this one for a second. The configuration editor is just a graphical kind of way of looking at all the different configurable elements in the web server and just having one single place to go in and actually change the configuration. There's some search capability in here.
Right.
You can lock certain sections to make sure they're not editable.
And these are the same things that you'd be hitting if you're going through the traditional icon-based stuff that you just had in the previous.
Yeah, and some of this is not in the icon-based stuff, and a lot of this is, for example, within the XML files that control the configuration of the server. Because IIS is based on the config.xml, system XML, web XML. That are the ultimate configuration files that govern all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a way of just editing all of that.
Ecosystem and extensibility, the last little bit, simply a matter of being able to go in and have access to different types of web standards you can now deploy and run on top of IIS and IIS servers. And then also a common development platform across all different types of different clouds and different options, basically on-prem or off-prem, working with Windows Azure or working with Windows Server.
Any code that you write for IIS, by definition, is portable to Windows Azure.
Mm-hmm.
In practicality, it's not always 100% because, they are different.
Yeah, but different architectures.
Right.
If you're trying to hit a local database, as an example, you're going to be making those calls differently if it's local, if it's remote, or if it happens to be
cloud-based. But you don't have to learn. It's not a different model you've got to use. If you write code to run in IIS, that code will run in Windows Azure.
Mm-hmm.
The only things you may have to account for are things like, you know, connection strings or things of that nature, especially running an Azure web instance, right?
Right.
Or an Azure VM instance. That they're by design identical, and so any code you write will just work.
Can you actually just bring up your demo machine just again for 1 second for IIS Manager? I just wanted to make one call out on the far right-hand side, I do believe. Get new web platform components right over there. You don't have to run that right now. On the bar, right under Actions, leave where you were. Under Actions, the right-hand side.
Yes.
That's the web platform installer, WPI.
Okay.
The web platform installer is going to be able to go in and bring you a whole whack of different types of third-party support, third-party languages. Node.js going to be able to go in and get PHP, go in and get different types of applications that can go off and run, bring it up.
Yep. So that's a way of extending functionality for the web server as well.
Right.
Right. So as Microsoft publishes new features and capabilities, like, you know, support for PHP comes down that way, support for cross development with Azure comes down that way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a unified way of just updating your web server and keeping it current with all the different things that are available for
it. Yep. Absolutely. And that's really actually about it for this particular section that I can see, man. I mean, it's record-breaking time.
It is. Well, in all fairness, you know, there isn't a lot here that's changed. So we do want to call it a couple of things. But for the most part, yeah, it's a pretty light section. So
obviously, development tools and development skills, if you are on the developer side of things, you're able to go off and use your traditional IDEs if you want to. You can go off and use Visual Studio as a first-class and fantastic development environment. The skills you're used to using with that tool there, obviously, is going to be working with IIS. Team Foundation Server as well, being able to check code in, check code out, and do, you know, a lot more than that as far as bug testing, that sort of stuff. And then also tying in, as we mentioned, into deploying and working with applications using those tools up to the web platform and up to Windows Azure, and being able to work with the Azure platform with the platform as a service for things go as well. And with that, my friend, we are done.
We're done.
A fast session. I'm just looking at the questions, and we have not a heck of a lot with them. I mean, we talked about shared configuration. We talked about centralized configuration, centralized SSL. There was a question there about those, again, those labs that you were doing. That last one you just did, all about IIS, is already available right now.
Yeah, it is.
And on Server 2012.
Yeah. So that one is, if you go here under, just do a search for, have a look at my screen real quick, Windows Server 2012 Virtual Labs.
Mm-hmm.
And that one was this guy here creating a web farm for multi-tenant applications. You click that, and it'll fire up the little lab environment.
Lab environment's all there initialized, and then it has on the back, it has a list of all the different documents you need to have to be able to do the different step-by-steps,
yep.
And it acts like a little sandbox you can go off and play with.
Exactly right. And so this is what I architected, is this whole thing here. This is my day job.
Nice.
This is what I do for fun.
Nice. As
I go hang out with you and talk tech. You know, and in all fairness to IIS, you know, most IT pro guys that tune in to this look at it and go, you know, fabric and a web server? So yeah, it's not surprising that there's not a lot of content here for us to work with.
Yep.
So.
Final closing slide over there, just again for resources if you're just joining us, aka.ms/ws2012r2 for getting a download preview of Server 2012 R2 preview, and download System Center 2012 R2 preview with aka.ms/sc2012r2. Microsoft Virtual Academy is where these recordings will eventually live to be able to go off and see them again on demand. And in case you are wondering or interested, because the way that we answer this question is quite simple, when is the RTM going to be available for these tools? Sometime in the future, when it is ready to be able to be released, is the way that we're looking at it, although that's about the much details we're going to go for that.
And so before we wrap up, we've had a lot of folks that are that have been on the web sending questions. Thank you for that. We've had a lot of people that have tuned in. We've had a lot of our subject matter experts that have been answering Q&A in the forums.
Yep.
And so thanks, guys, for doing all that. It's been a fun couple of days. It's been a year since we did this.
Yeah.
I wonder will we do it again next year?
We never know. We never know for sure. Again, calling up the guys. A number of MVPs have been helping out as well. There's been MCTs that are in there helping us out as part of the big community, as well as other Microsoft staffers and other people in the engineering team. So thank you very much for helping us out. Go back and check out some other potential courses you can take a look at MicrosoftVirtualAcademy.com. And with that, my friend, I'm going to say what's new in Windows Server 2012 R2 is a wrap. We're done. Let's go off and enjoy our days.
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us.